This is PodTech.net for Tuesday, September 26th. In Los Angeles, I'm Matt Kelly. I'm joined today by Joe Fleischer of BigChampagne.com, an online media measurement company whose founders have been covering the peer-to-peer landscape since the early days of Napster. We've come a long way since then, with the latest salvo being fired by LimeWire, who on Monday filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court against some of the biggest record companies, charging them with anti-competitive behavior. It comes on the heels of a lawsuit by 13 record companies against LimeWire, claiming damages from piracy could exceed $475 million. Joe, welcome to the podcast. What could you tell us about the lawsuit filed yesterday by LimeWire?
The charge by LimeWire is that the RIAA has been restrictive in the types of business that they, businesses that they intend to license or are willing to license with their member labels' content, and that LimeWire thinks that that is a form of restraint, and that there are probably more business models available that consumers would be interested in than simply the web-based digital music stores like Napster and iTunes and Walmart and Reel, things like that, and the one sort of operational legitimate in quotes P2P that the RIAA has sponsored, which is iMesh.
Grokster, eDonkey, Kazaa, all taken to court by the record companies and all ended up settling. Is LimeWire going to be another addition or exception to that list?
It's hard to say. I mean, the Lime Group is a little, which is the parent company of LimeWire, is a slightly different type of organization than those others in that they have quite a few different businesses in technology and commercial software and P2P, which hasn't really been that, great a business for anyone anyway, and certainly isn't a business opportunity anymore post-Grokster. You know, it's hard to say. I can't be sure what exactly the strategy will be for them. If you look at the history of the Big Four, which was once the Big Five and which was once the Big Seven, meaning the major labels, they've always tried to certainly do things on their own terms, whether it's distribution or retail or involvement with radio and even cooperating with the Spitzer investigation and Paola. I think that they like to do things in lockstep, and I think that they certainly want to control this environment as much as they can, because as we've seen with the advent of YouTube and MySpace, that free on-demand music is not solely the dominion of P2P. It's really available everywhere now. And so with the bottom line so incredibly under fire or in flames and off, well over a third from peak, it's really desperate times. And so I think that they're really looking for anything they can do to boost revenues.
Do you want to comment on what you see, in a sense, going on in this whole industry right now?
Well, the commercial software P2P business really isn't much of an opportunity, and that's for a lot of reasons. The main reason is commercial software that connects to P2P networks provides an additional layer of friction to the consumer that is not necessary. Meaning, if you're connecting to the eDonkey network or the Overnet network, which is what eDonkey runs on, you're probably not using eDonkey. You're probably using a free open source version of the software that has no advertisement, no ad impressions, no ad inventory, no spyware, and isn't really built for commercial gain. So when you look at what the effect of the legal strategy of the RIAA is, it is not on the networks themselves. They thrive, they get larger, there are more users, there are more files. P2P is just an expression of the Internet, right? I mean, the Internet was designed to facilitate file transfer, and that's what P2P is. It just happens to be a particularly vilified one by content because of, I think, probably the press sexiness of the original Napster. But has it had any effect on use? Of course not. I mean, it would be silly to contend that you could impede file transfer on the Internet. I don't think anyone sincerely contends that that's what's happening. But is it going to change the landscape for commercial proprietors of software? Yeah, I think that opportunity has been removed by the Supreme Court decision.
BitTorrent is also getting into doing an online download movie space.
BitTorrent.com, the search portal through which you find content, can promote any sort of business model it intends to. So if it wants to provide a movie downloading store that comes with DRM or whatever sort of approved restrictions make content owners comfortable, then that might be a business opportunity for them. Movie downloading at iTunes, certainly we saw, even with the very limited titles, has had a lot of uptake because it makes so much more sense than going to the video store, right? But if you look at BitTorrent, again, the network, which really doesn't have a whole lot to do with BitTorrent.com, it's a completely free swapping bazaar that gains traction and gains users every single day, and what content is swapped on it, nobody has any say over. So, you know, as an industry, the P2P, commercial P2P companies can work to build these legitimate models, but keep in mind, legitimacy automatically equates to additional friction, right? Because the current consumer proposition for file trading in P2P, whether it's BitTorrent or it's traditional peer-to-peer, is it's everything I want, it's whenever I want it, I can do whatever I want with it, and it's free. Well, that's the consumer proposition. That doesn't really work very well for the content companies unless they figure out a way to get it either ad-supported or a license-based model for revenue, meaning like on MySpace, they get paid when somebody streams a song because there's ads. You know, they're ad-supporting it. You don't have an ad stream in P2P, so that's not available to you. So you're going to have to get paid somewhere else. Probably that would be some sort of license, like similar to the license used in radio. But the content owners don't want that. So let's just assume, for the most part, that content's just not going to be paid for, statistically, through either P2P or probably most of the web. So that leaves them with the idea that they're going to have the models that they hope, through a combination of education or marketing or moral posturing, that they can get people to endure the friction and the restrict use to get on the right side of the law and get content owners paid. That's very difficult. That's going to be a struggle. I'm not really sure how it plays out, but it looks probably like at some point the consumer will win on 100% of every single issue, and the content industry will figure out a way to work into a license or web stream, a web ad stream atmosphere. And keep in mind, LimeWire really is such an elegant piece of software. And it provided ad inventory and potentially could have been a marketplace through which content owners were paid. But the content owners do not want to be paid for peer-to-peer file transfer. They're not going to allow that. They want to either squash it or marginalize it, which is proving to be quite a problem. A lot of people have compared it to the fictitious war on drugs. You know, you can try to minimize it, but it's a difficult problem. I mean, no one is disputing that it's copyright infringement, and no one is disputing that content owners need to be paid, but it's a particularly tough road that they've chosen, and that's why it's all about failure so far.
Your final thoughts on the announcement by LimeWire that they are suing some of the biggest record companies?
The most salient component of this strategy on Lime's part is that they're saying there need to be other options for legitimate payment of content owners on the internet. And that's obviously true. And that's true from a market standpoint, because the current model where you buy a song for 99 cents is not any better, really, statistically, than getting all of your music stolen, right? I mean, if the record business alone, you just look at their model, they used to be paid $10 wholesale for the sale of a CD. That's how you made your money, because less than 2% of your records that come out each year make any money. So you need big blockbuster titles that sell in bundled form for $10 each. When you can reduce that addressable revenue by more than 90% legally and give the consumer the opportunity to buy the song for 99 cents, which means you net about 60 cents as a master owner, that's just as bad. So Lime is probably correct in saying that, look, there's got to be a better way to do this. There's got to be a bundle somewhere where we can make some real revenues and artists can have some of the power back. But at the moment, it's just a standoff, and it's a war that's a particularly heated one, and the content owners have chosen their strategy, and, you know, it's like Sherman's march to the sea. The only problem is when you get to the sea, there's nothing there.
It's a war that we will be covering certainly in the days and months to follow. My thanks to Joe Fleischer of BigChampagne.com, an online media measurement firm, for his analysis of today's LimeWire lawsuit. For Podtech News, I'm Matt Kelly in Los Angeles.